Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Spurs Up Show, best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. Today is Monday, July the 26th, 2021. On today's show, we continue along with the 2021 TSUS season preview series. Guys, on today's show, we're talking Gamecocks defense heading into the 2021 football season. Guys, first things first, we'll look back at the 2020 season, key departures, key returners, also top storylines for the unit in 2021, as well as why they'll be better, why they'll be worse. Season will be successful if, and I'll give my prediction for the Gamecocks defense in the 2021 football season. Also, guys, news and notes that include the madness that ensued over the weekend with Texas, Oklahoma, the ever-shifting landscape of college football. Guys, I will give my thoughts on the possibility of two Big 12 powers possibly joining the SEC. Also, Yardcocks news and notes. We've got Bannergate 2021 to get into. We've got your listener questions as well, and a fantastic conversation, guys. Friend of the show and a real pro at what he does, Brett Ciantia, Pick Six Previews, joins me to break down the Gamecocks 2021 football season, including Shane Beamer, first-year expectations, offense, defense, special teams. We also talk SEC, his playoff predictions. Guys, we've got a packed show here on a Monday, and it's all brought to you by our friends over at Upstate Movers Group. Guys, Upstate Movers Group, superior moving service. They bring care and attention the companies can't offer because they're just too busy maintaining trucks and profiting off of them instead of focusing on service. Guys, service is what separates Upstate Movers Group from the competition. They're not a trucking company. They're a moving services company, and they're also employee-owned co-op. The movers are paid twice the industry average, and everyone on the crew is invested in your success. They have dedicated professional crew members, and they also offer black glove service. They offer end-to-end packing services, custom crating and packing for special items, and cleaning services as well. They're founded by Greenville natives and University of South Carolina alumni, guys, so a Gamecock-owned small business. They also offer 20 years of project management moving experience, and they can offer logistics and solutions that traditional moving companies simply do not have the skills for. Guys, whether in the upstate or across the state of South Carolina, if you have any moving needs in 2021, please be sure to check out our friends over at Upstate Movers Group. You can find them on social media at Upstate Movers Group. Of course, guys, if you have any other questions, go to their website, upstatemoversgroup.com. That's upstatemoversgroup.com. Be sure to check them out and tell them Chris from the Spurs Up Show sent you. Let's get it. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, happy Monday. Hope you're all doing well. I'm Chris Phillips, host of the Spurs Up Show. As always, appreciate you guys tuning in, guys, wherever this might be finding you, whether you're on the commute, you're in the office, you're on the job, you've got the day off, whatever it might be. Folks, hope you are doing well here on this Monday. Again, thank you all so much for the continued love and support. Continue to rock with the content, rock with everything we do. I am fired up to chat with you all here on a Monday, because boy, oh boy, what a packed Monday it is. What a hell of a week we've got lined up with Carolina football. We're getting closer and closer and closer. Guys, we've got 40 days to kick off. We're about to get in the 30s. You know what happens when we get in the 30s? We get down to 1 month. You know what happens when we get 1 month to kick off? We got fall camp creeping up on us. We've got Shane Beamer's welcome home tours happening, whether you're in Columbia, you're in Charlotte, you're all across the state. Hey, man, it's that time of year. Football is in the air, folks. And again, like I've said many, many times, I appreciate you all, your love and support throughout this preseason as we've gone through the dog days of summer, and we're going to go through the dog days of August, and we've gone through the peak preseason. We got people arguing over color shades of banners and the color shades of garnet, which I'm going to get into in just a little bit. But again, that's how you know it's the preseason, right? When we're arguing about stuff like that. But again, folks, Thank you all so much for tuning in. Again, I appreciate you all, man, the love and support. You guys continue to rock with everything we do, man. There's so much positive momentum, not only surrounding Gamecocks football and Gamecocks athletics, but the Spurs Up Show, the business, man, everything we're doing. It's truly, man, I'll never stop being grateful. And I thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you all so much for spending this Monday or whatever day it might be, whenever you're tuning into this. Thank you all so much for the continued love and support. Hey, how can you not be fired up when we're talking Gamecocks football and specifically that Carolina defense on today's show? Folks, before we get into all that, we do have a couple of housekeeping items, a couple of big time announcements that I want to go over before we go through our defensive preview. First things first, guys, if you did not see it on social media late yesterday, I'm very proud to announce my good friend and I, Jeff O'Hara, a.k.a. Cox by 90, will be teaming up live yet again August the 20th, 5 to 7 from Rita's Seaside Grill in Folly Beach, South Carolina. Folks, to tell you all that I am excited, that I am pumped, that I am fired up for this would be a freaking understatement. For those who know me, you know I love Charleston. I love Folly Beach. Hell, I spent like a month there last year when it was during the pandemic and COVID and all the madness. Dude, I was hanging out down in John's Island, James Island, whatever it is, down in Charleston, down on Folly, spent 4th of July on Folly. I freaking love Folly Beach. Rita's Seaside Grill, also a fantastic establishment. Appreciate those guys having us out. Appreciate my guy Jeff over here at Cox by 90 asking me to join him. It is going to be one hell of a time. Sort of our official, unofficial, official kickoff party. If you will, it's August 20th, man, we'll be like 2 weeks away, like a week, actually a week and a half. Yeah, two weeks. We'll be 2 weeks from kickoff on August 20th. So again, guys, if you're in the area, come on out. Going to be a great time, a great night. Going to be a great weekend. Yours truly, like I said, I'm looking at it as, hey, I get an excuse to go to the beach, one last beach trip before the season gets going. Because of course, guys, hey, September the 4th, we're locked in till like end of December. Then we got basketball, then we got baseball. So, hey, and we love it, but what could be better? Couple bros talking Gamecocks, talking ball, you all there by the beach, and a fantastic establishment, fantastic people. You can't ask for anything better. So, again, very excited and proud to announce TSUS Cox by 90 live from Rita's Seaside Grill, Folly Beach, South, on August the 20th, 5 to 7. And we will, for those who cannot attend, we will be streaming it just like I stream everything else on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch. But again, if you can come out, start making your plans now. Again, more details to follow. But again, that graphic is on social media. Pretty much all the details are out and there. So like I said, guys, going to be a fantastic time on Folly Beach, August the 20th, 5 to 7. Also, guys, quick reminder, quick update. I will be going tonight. You're hearing this on Monday. Tonight, the Welcome Home Tour gets going for Shane Beamer at Williams-Brice Stadium. Yours truly will be in the building. We are going to be there. I want to let you guys know, if you are a member of the Big Cock Club, good job. If you're not, you might want to go join because I will be putting out a full recap of everything. Shane Beamer, Frank Martin, Shane Beamer's staff, everyone says just how the night goes, all of the highlights, everything Coach Beamer has to say. I will be putting out a full recap, a full breakdown on the Big Cock Club Patreon. So be sure to go join the Big Cock Club. Again, it's patreon.com/Big Cock Club or head over to our link tree, which is basically our link in bio. All of our link in bios are the link tree. Again, join today. That's just one of the many perks, guys. We've got the Discord. We've got the Behind the Beak series. We've got different updates, content updates, all that good stuff. But this breakdown with Shane Beamer will be on the Big Cock Club Patreon, guys. Again, that's patreon.com/Big Cock Club. But very excited to get inside Willie B tonight, hear everything Coach Beamer has to say. And I expect it to be more of the same of what we heard at SEC Media Days and Coach Beamer continuing the positive momentum. And who knows? Who knows? Maybe. Just maybe I can chat with Coach Beamer about coming on these here airwaves. Why not? Should be a fun night. Either way, the Welcome Home Tour, guys, getting going this week. If you need your tickets, check it out. But going to be a really, really good time at Williams-Brice Stadium. Also, guys, of course, Tin Roof continues to roll on Wednesday. We've got confirmed John Strickland as a guest. I think Savelle Newton. I think Savelle Newton, he may or may not. It's 50-50 right now, but I think Savelle will be there with us. But again, I think it's Savelle Newton, John Strickland for sure confirmed. Also, we've got our NCAA streams going all week. Koozies also, guys. A quick update for those who bought koozies. They will be sent out this week. I apologize for the wait on those Beamer Ball and Welcome Home koozies. The vendor I used, I probably will never use again because they have pushed back. They kept delaying in regards to shipment. So they have irritated me. They have pissed me off. Hey, whatever. It's a learning lesson. It is what it is. But either way, guys, those koozies will be going out this week. So again, guys, if you ordered koozies, I do apologize for the delay, but they will go out this week. Okay, we've got the housekeeping items out of the way. Without further ado, let's dive in the meat and potatoes. Let's dive into the main portion, the main course, if you will, of this show. The TSUS season preview series of the 2021 football season rolls on, guys. Today, we are talking Gamecocks defense heading into the 2021 football season. And just like the rest of this Carolina football team, whether it be offense, defense, special teams, whatever it may be, question marks are all over the place for this unit. Guys, before we dive into this year's defense, let's look back at last year. You guys want to humor yourselves a little bit? Let's look back at last year's defense. Boy, oh boy, what a year it was. The Gamecocks ranked 12th in the SEC and 107th nationally in points per game given up with 36 points per game. And in yards per game, the Gamecocks ranked 10th in the SEC and 105th nationally, 452 yards per game. Now, for those, of course, like I said, we had my guy Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, on the show today. Great stuff. Great conversation. He does a fantastic job with his magazine. Very good job, by the way, of organizing the statistics where it's very easy to read, very easy to find. He breaks it down, simplifies it for you. But again, fantastic information. And so you may have seen what I posted on social media last night, the graphic that my buddy, again, Brett did with Pick Six Previews of the Gamecocks offense. And I will be posting a screenshot of the defensive statistics as well. But what you might have noticed with those offensive statistics is what he does is, depending, you know, he lists things like scoring, you know, yards per game, total offense, total defense, whatever, yards per play, sacks, whatever, statistics for both offense and defense. And he puts the national ranking next to that, and you'll see a color coding system. It's either red, yellow, green, dark red, dark green, whatever it might be. Well, if you're green or dark green, that means you are one of the best, right? You're near the top of the country. If you are red or dark red, that means you're one of the worst. If you're yellow, of course, you're in the middle. Well, when you guys see this graphic of South Carolina's defense statistically a year ago, there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of red and very, very, very dark red. I'm telling you guys nothing you don't already know. The defense was a mess last year. It was atrocious. It was pitiful. It was awful. There's no way to sugarcoat it. And hey, that, folks, is probably the number one reason, outside of a multitude of other things, that to me is the number one reason why you saw the changing of the guard at the head coaching position. I told you guys last year, not to harp too much on the 2020 season, but I told you guys it would be a bigger indictment on the Gamecocks coaching staff in 2020 if the defense was below average than if the offense struggled again. And certainly enough, guys, saying that the defense was below average a season ago is putting it very, very politely. Again, 36 points per game, 452 yards per game in the 2020 football season. Let's talk key departures and key returners, guys, as we look at this 2021 unit. We'll start key departures. And of course, you've got to start in the secondary. The secondary, of course, is where you were hit the hardest. Defensive backs J.C. Horn and Israel Mukwamu, both taken in the 2021 NFL draft. Of course, J.C. Horn, most notably, the 8th overall pick to the Carolina Panthers. So both those guys are gone. Defensive back Jamie Robinson, John Dixon, also gone in the transfer portal. You also lost defensive lineman Keir Thomas in the transfer portal. And then really, I think one of the most underrated losses for this year's group is really the guy, guys, that I say is the heart and soul, or was the heart and soul of your defense a year ago. You know, even when things were rough, week in, week out, you know, this guy continued to show up, a real lunch pail type of player, and that is linebacker Ernest Jones. Again, I thought his impact was very underrated. It was felt week after week, led the Gamecocks basically in tackles every single season he was on campus. So again, linebacker Ernest Jones, another key loss. But certainly the secondary, I think most of us would agree, is where you were hit the hardest when it comes to your key departures going into the 2021 football season. Now, key returners, you do have some talent coming back. I know that's something else we would all agree with, certainly, and it starts up front. Defensive lineman J.J. Enagbare, also defensive lineman Jordan Burch. You've got defensive lineman Zach Pickens. In the secondary, you got defensive back Cam Smith. You've got linebacker Mo Kaba. And then your DBs, R.J. Roderick and Jalen Dickerson. So there are some familiar faces. Also, defensive lineman Tonka Hemingway, defensive lineman Rick Sandage. Tons of guys coming back from last year's team in the front seven, and also a ton of new faces on the defense as well, which we'll get into more in just a second. But you've got a lot of guys coming back that have played good football for you, especially J.J. Enagbare, who I think we'd all agree is, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, he is the leader of this defense. I think this is his defense. I don't know if he's quite that vocal leader, but certainly when you look at a guy who has the highest projection for his future and who is the most talented, most likely, it is right now at least J.J. Enagbare, a guy that was picked by the media first team preseason All SEC. And we know what J.J. did a year ago, leading his team in sacks, was one of the most fierce pass rushers in the conference. So you do have a nice core of talent returning in 2021, but especially in the back half, some guys that are unproven for Clayton White in his first year. Guys, let's move into top storylines for the 2021 football season for the Gamecocks defense. And I mentioned Clayton White. I think one of the biggest storylines this year is the return of the 4-2-5 defense. And that scheme coming back to Columbia, guys, if you remember, this is the same scheme South kind of ran when it was in the midst of its most successful run in school history, 10-13. This is the defense the Gamecocks run under Ellis Johnson, right? This is what they did. And it really gives your defense the ability, hey, let your guys be athletes. Now, those two in the middle, those two linebackers, one being a linebacker, most likely the other being like an Antonio Allen, a spur, if you will, you know, they've got to do their part. But certainly it's going to give your guys the opportunity to be just use their athleticism and be true athletes. The return of the 4-2-5 defense, what does that mean for South Carolina? And the overall scheme, what do they try to do? Again, I want to get into that more in just a little bit, but the return of the 4-2-5, coming back to Columbia, what type of impact does that have on a defense that struggled so mightily in really any formation they were in a season ago? Of course, one of the other big storylines, I taught J.J. Enagbare, I listed off Jordan Burch and Zach Pickens and Sandage and Tonkin. I can just keep going down the list. But this Gamecocks defense leaning on the defensive front, I think that is the headliner when you're talking South on a defense going into Shane Beamer's first season and Clayton White's first season effectively as defensive coordinator. Listen, if you're going to have a successful season this year, and I may be jumping the gun just a little bit, but if you're going to have the type of season you want, if you're going to make a jump on the defensive side of the football, I've listed off names, right? We can just keep going. Hey, Brad Johnson, Aaron Sterling, guys I haven't even talked about, right? There's so many of them. Jordan Strawn's another one. You keep going down the list. You've got athletes on up front. There's no question. You have athletes that can win at the point of attack. And if South Carolina's defensive line does not have the type of year we are hoping it does, you're not going to be improved on the defensive side. You're just simply not. You're not going to get better because, again, the defense was ugly last year. It was ugly. And if you don't think getting after the quarterback is important, get this stat from our friends over at collegefootballnews.com. I posted this actually a few months ago. It was a slow Saturday. I was reading college football news, and I came across this stat. And I know it might sound like no duh, Chris. It might sound like a no-brainer, but it's just mind-blowing to read out loud, right? Listen to this. Last season, South Carolina came up with 10 sacks in the first four games of the season, right? And it went 2-2, okay? And the other two losses, I think we could say, you know, were not all that bad, right? You went 2-2. In the next six games, South Carolina recorded just 4 sacks and went 0-6, okay? So you had 10 sacks in the first four games, you went 2-2. The last six games, you had 4 sacks and you lost every single damn one of them. Get this, though. It goes even further. Going back to 2016, South Carolina is 13-2 when generating 3 or more sacks in a game. So if you don't think getting after the quarterback is important, especially for this year's unit with the questions you've got in the back half, hey, it all comes down to the defensive front. This is a defense that will be leaning on its defensive front and its defensive line. And like Shane Beamer said at SEC Media Days, he made the point, if you've got the talent and athleticism, and if you feel good on the line of scrimmage, if you can win at the point of attack, you've got a chance. And South Carolina, I feel like we say it year after year. I feel like I've been saying the Gamecocks defensive line is a strength for the last 5 years. You know, I feel like I keep saying it year after year after year. Well, at some point, that defensive line has to live up to the hype. They have to be who we think they are. I think this year could be that year. But again, when you're talking storylines, you're talking this defense, you're talking the headliner, it is that front seven. It is that front four. And it's those athletes up front that should be able to make life hell for opposing quarterbacks. And in the run game, by the way, I think they finally got the size, should be able to plug those gaps, plug those holes, win at the point of attack, and give South Carolina a chance on the defensive side. Now, moving along, another big storyline. I mentioned him earlier. I think one of the most underrated departures, one we have not talked about enough, guys, is Ernest Jones. When I talked about leaders, who is the leader of this defense? Now, I mentioned J.J. Nibari. Now, statistically, he is the leader, but is he that vocal leader? Is he that guy? You know, Ernest Jones said it very, very clearly in the spring of 2020, guys. I don't know if you remember this. He said, this is my defense. I am the leader of this defense. This is my defense, bottom line. Is there a guy on that defense right now like that? Because that's very important. You know, who is the guy that our guys are going to turn to, you know, when things don't go well, right? Because it's inevitably at some point you're going to hit adversity. You're going to hit struggles. This defense is going to go through some rough patches. Who is that guy on defense that our guys, you know, DJ Swearinger was that guy for a while. Stephon Gilmore, I think, was that guy, you know, in spurts, if you will. Sky Moore was that guy. And Ernest Jones was that guy. Who's going to be that leader? Is it JJ? Is it a guy like Cam Smith in the secondary? Is it a linebacker like Debo Williams or Sherrod Green or Mo Kaba? Who is it? Who's going to fill the shoes of the departed Ernest Jones? Because like I said, guys, a very underrated piece last year, a very underrated piece during his career, and I think a very, very underrated loss for South kind of defensively. Somebody's got to step up, not only, by the way, as the leader, but as the stopper in the middle of that defense. The Gamecocks, for whatever reason, guys, I don't know what it is. At linebacker, I mean, would anybody consider us linebacker you? I certainly wouldn't. I don't think you would. I don't know what it is. We just have not, you know, we've had some nice linebackers come through here and there, but we're not a school that it's like year after year after year linebacker I look at as a strength for us. Linebacker almost just feels like it's just, that's kind of there. You know, we're okay. We're probably seventh or eighth best in the SEC at the linebacker position. Nothing great, nothing flashy, nothing spectacular, but it's just there. Again, maybe Debo Williams can change that. Maybe Sherrod Green can have the best year of his career. Maybe Mo Cobb can come into his own, a guy that I'm really excited about. Maybe Damani Staley, you know, maybe some guys like that can step up. But again, it all comes down to, from a leadership perspective, from a middle of that defense perspective, who is going to be the guy or guys who fill the shoes of a guy that, like I said, I think is such an underrated loss for Clayton White's defense coming in this 2021 football season. Guys, another big storyline, and maybe the biggest question on this football team, certainly outside of the wide receiver position, is the secondary. I feel like we've been talking secondary all preseason long. And I will say this, first things first, let's tip the cap and let's give some credit, a round of applause, by the way, to Shane Beamer, Torian Gray, Clayton White, that entire defensive staff, right? That entire defensive staff for what they've been able to do in trying to plug away at that secondary. Guys they've added through the transfer portal, through, you know, grad transfers, just through different, you know, different means of ways of adding guys. They have tried their damnedest to fill that roster because, guys, we heard them talk about the secondary in the spring. When you lose guys like J.C. Horn, Isra Mukwamu, Johnny Dixon, Jamie Robinson, you just keep going down the list of names. When you lose guys like that, you think to yourself, man, this is going to be a group that's really going to hurt and really going to struggle. I commend Shane Beamer. I commend Torian Gray for the ability, what they've been able to do in regards to adding to this roster. Guys like Caron Prunty and Marcellus Dial and Tyrese Ross. And again, I want to get more into these guys in just a second. But they've been able to plug away and fill holes. Because guys, we heard them in the spring talking about the secondary. They said, hey, we're running a 4-2-5. We're having trouble fielding two secondaries. We don't even have 10 scholarship defensive backs. Depth is an issue. Lack of experience is an issue. And again, a retooled secondary will look to improve on a season ago. Like, guys, like I told you, what's crazy, though, is all those guys I mentioned with J.C. Horn, with Isra Mukwamu, and all due respect to them, the pass defense, it was atrocious. It was terrible. It was terrible. Passing defense yards per game, 256 yards per game, 97th best in the country. Yards per attempt, 8.8, 115th in the country. Quarterback rating, 159, 118th in the country. Completion percentage, 66.6%, 115th in the country. Explosive pass, 8.6, 116th in the country. And return production, okay, that's return production. Whatever. Either way, you hear those statistics. Even with those guys in the secondary, they were terrible. So, can Torian Gray, guys, I've talked about it a lot this preseason, two assistant coaches who have the greatest opportunity to make a big impact on this season and to really explode on the scene, if you will, as far as like big-time assistants, are Justin Stepp and Torian Gray, because those are the two position units that are the biggest deficiencies and the biggest question marks coming into this season. So, again, I think we all agree that that, even with the additions, is going to be the deficiency on this second, or excuse me, in this defense, if you will. But can they make any sort of stride? Can a retooled secondary with guys like Cam Smith stepping up, can he be DB1? Can Jalen Dickerson and RJ Roderick and Darius Rush and Jalen Foster and Joey Hunter and Dominic Hill and O'Donnell Fortune? Again, a lot like the receivers, there's a lot of guys in that room. There's enough guys with talent in that room, I think, to make it happen. But you got to have guys going, being from, you know, nice prospects, nice recruits, to being consistent every week contributors and being guys you can depend on. What can Torian Gray get out of this unit? One of the biggest questions on this football team. Like I said, guys, one of the biggest storylines, and I mentioned a couple of them already, but the transfers, right? There are a lot of new faces. You know, when we're talking key returners and key departures and all that, but especially returners, you know, we don't talk about all the guys in the transfer portal that South kind of was able to add. I mean, you look at the guys and some very talented football players that should play a lot of football for South County. We'll start Jordan Strawn from Georgia State, which, by the way, if you haven't heard of this guy, oh, he just led college football last year in sacks. He just led, let me say it again. He led college football, all of it, all of the entire thing. He led all of college football in sacks at Georgia State. So Jordan Strawn, and I've heard, you know, our good friend Jeff O'Hare at Cox by 90, he's talked about it, that Jordan Strawn's a guy who's getting like a second round grade as a sophomore. I mean, this is a dude that certainly should bolster already the strength of your unit, which is the defensive line. I talked about Karan Prunty was a huge, and I mean a huge win for Shane Beamer and Torian Gray, landing him over the Tennessee Volunteers. Prunty, a guy I think should start immediately opposite of Cam Smith. I think certainly he's going to be one of your best defensive players. And again, he's going to be a day one starter, a freshman All-American from Kansas, did it at the big time Power Five level, did it in a big time conference. I expect Prunty to be an immediate impact player for you. That was a huge pickup. Tyrese Ross from Washington State, I think he should get looks immediately. Marcellus Dial, a grad transfer. We saw him in the spring game. I thought he looked really good. Again, I know it's the spring game, but I heard good things. I think he'll contribute. And then Debo Williams in the middle at the linebacker position. We saw him flying around the spring game. Like I said, I know it's the spring game, take it with a grain of salt, but Debo Williams, a guy we heard the second he stepped on campus, was a dude that took over as, you know, the leader of the defense and a leader in the weight room and a leader in the locker room. Can he be that guy? And again, there are others as well I'm probably not mentioning, but as many returners and familiar faces as there are a lot of newcomers that aren't necessarily freshmen that Shane Beamer and Clayton White and this coaching staff are going to call on to make a difference and make an impact. And I just wonder how big of an impact. Like I said, Strawn coming from Georgia State. And I know he was college football sack leader, to play devil's advocate, though. It was at Georgia State. Can he adjust to this level? You know, Tyrese Ross coming from Washington State to the SEC. Karan Prunty coming from the Big 12 to the SEC. Marcellus Dial coming from JUCO to the SEC. Debo Williams coming from Delaware to the SEC. Hey, I think it's smart for Gamecock fans to not, you know, ask these guys to be all conference players or all Americans. But just be, like I mentioned before, just be consistent pieces, consistent contributors on a week-in, week-out basis for this defense. Hey, and I think good things will happen. But again, you've got a plethora of guys, quality transfers you were able to snag out of the transfer portal, grad transfers, whatever they were, or in recruiting. And I think Shane Beamer, like I said, his entire staff, you got to tip your cap to those guys for landing all the guys and all the others that I mentioned or even didn't mention. Another big storyline for me, guys. You know, I talked a little bit about this new coaching staff. Again, it's a brand new defensive staff with Clayton White as your DC, Jimmy Lindsay, D-line coach. What, you still got, Mike Peterson, linebacker? Please forgive me if I mess that up. But Torian Gray in your secondary. You got a ton of new coaches, right? Brand new defensive staff, basically. Brand new, which is probably a good thing. But a brand new defensive staff. One of my biggest question marks, and what's so funny about what I'm about to say, for those who have watched me play NCAA, right, I have mentioned this time and time and time again. And that's sort of one of the funny things. It's like I've been saying it over and over while playing NCAA, but it's been like actually put into action, if you will. And I think one of the top storylines, at least for me personally, but I think it is a big storyline that I think Gamecock fans, you guys should be paying attention to, is the overall strategy of Clayton White, the philosophy. You know, we talked about identity on offense. Well, hey, what's the defensive identity, right? Are we going to be more of an aggressive defense or more of a conservative defense? And what I mean by that is this, right? Realistically, you know, and of course, next week, we're going to start breaking down these position units, right? We're going to break down D-line, linebacker, secondary, all of it, okay? But I think most of us would agree that on this defense, the strength is the front seven, it's the defensive line, and the big question mark, the deficiency, is the secondary. Now, my question is this. Is South Carolina going to be a defense where third and seven, third and eight, right? Let's say you get them into a third and long, okay? You got them in an obvious passing situation, or what I would call an obvious passing situation. I think third and seven or longer, that is an obvious passing down, okay? You get in an obvious passing situation. What does Clayton White do? Is he more of a coach that wants to sit back and trust his DBs and, or more so trust his front four that he can get pressure with four and take the risk of not getting there, but also help out his secondary? Does he want to play it back a little bit more? Or is he a coach on third and seven or longer? He says, you know what? Secondary is our issue. We're not going to ask our guys to play coverage like that. We're not going to ask our guys to sit back there and cover for 3-4 seconds. We're going to send a blitz. We're going to send six guys. Hell, we might send seven guys. We are going to make sure we get to the quarterback. And again, I think that's the question Clayton White is going to have to answer himself. How much do you gamble? How aggressive are you? How much do you pick and choose your spots, right, of aggressiveness versus sitting back in coverage? You know, again, trusting you'll get there with three or four guys and helping out a secondary that, like I said, guys, hey, guess what? In your secondary, your leading returning contributor, your leading returning defensive back has three career starts. Three. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. So what does Clayton White do? Is he more of a DC that wants to roll the dice and send the blitz and bring exotic pressures and all that stuff? Or does he want to trust his defense will, you know, get there with four? Or even worse, by the way, and I don't even want to bring this up, but we saw it a bunch over the last couple of years, that bend but don't break mentality, right? Playing with a cushion, you know, playing soft between the 20s, then trying to tighten up in the red zone. I hope and pray to God we don't see that, because, man, it's like dying a slow and painful death to watch that. But with Clayton White's defense, is he more aggressive? Is he more conservative? And I expect him to mix it up. How much does he mix it up? Like, do we lean more towards the aggressive side? Do we roll the dice more often? Or, like I said, does Clayton White want to sit back, help out a young secondary, trust his front four to get there with just four? What is the strategy there? I'll be really interested to see that. Now, guys, final storyline I want to talk about for the 2021 football season defensively. And I think this one is really, really interesting. If you've been listening to some of the conversations I've had with guys like Phil Steele and Chris Marler and tons of others that I've talked to about this upcoming season, you've definitely heard me say this more than a time or two, right? Because when you look at this team and you look at this defense specifically, it is very easy for an outsider to look at it and say, oh, well, you know, I mean, they lost JC and they lost Izzy and they lost Jamie and they lost John Dixon. Oh, the defense, you know, they lost Ernest Jones. You know, they lost Keir Thomas up front. You know, they got some nice pieces, but the defense is going to take a step back. They're going to take a step back, right? This is a bad defense last year. They're going to be even worse this year. They're going to be hurting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. First year defensive coordinator, blah, 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 whatever. But this is what I have written in my notes, guys, and I would pose this to you. Well, At least it can't get any worse than last year. Dot, dot, dot. Right? I mean, because on paper, and again, from the national perspective, those might look at this and say, man, this defense is going to be so much worse. Here's the thing, though. 36 points per game in 2020. 452 yards per game. And when you think about the guys that I just listed off, hey, I didn't even list off Shiloh Sanders. There's others as well that dipped out. But when I listed off the guys like JC, Izzy, all those secondary guys, and then I read off the statistics, guys, it simply doesn't make sense. And I'm talking fan expectations, right, with this first year, because we've all got expectations. Hey, here's what I expect offensively, defensively, record, blah, 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 whatever. But when you're talking specifically defense, I'm a bit torn, if you will, because – like I mentioned, there's a part of me that's like, man, we lost so much. We have a lack of depth. You know, how could we be any better? But then it's like, how could we be any worse than we were a season ago? I mean, guys, we were historically bad. We were historically bad. And so you think to yourself, hey, secondary is the biggest deficiency. Secondary is the biggest question. Well, even with those guys I mentioned, we weren't worth a shit. So what difference is it going to be losing them anyways? Even with those guys, we couldn't cover. Even with those guys, we were giving up 256 yards per game through the air. I mean, so I'm a bit torn when I talk predictions for the defense or first-year expectations under Clayton White, because on one hand, like I said, guys, you did lose a lot, and you lose a lot from a defense that wasn't very good last year. But on the flip side, maybe, just maybe, this change of culture, this change of coaching staff, this change of philosophy, maybe, just maybe now, that will be the trick in getting more out of a defense that I think we all agree had far too much talent to be as bad as they were last year. Had far, far too much talent. Does that talent shine through this year? Are you able to get the most out of the new guys who were on campus? And maybe, just maybe, like I said, surprise some people defensively. All right, let's move into why they'll be better, why they'll be worse. Again, you guys remember this from the last show. I talk about why I think the Gamecocks defense could be better or will be better this season, why they could be worse or will be worse in this upcoming season. Guys, let's start with why I think the Gamecocks defense will be better in the 2021 football season. And I just touched on it. Because if you go back, again, my good friend Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews, right? Great conversation on this show in just a little bit. You look at the recruiting numbers, and you look at where South Carolina has finished in their classes, excluding last year. Last year's a wash. During the previous coaching regime, since 2016, the Gamecocks classes have finished as such: 25th, 21st, 18th, 17th, and 18th. The Gamecocks have a five-year average of 28th, and that includes last year when you finished 78th, right? So, point being this, there's talent on this defense. You have literally two five-star players that will be in your starting lineup in Zach Pickens and Jordan Burch. You have a guy on the edge in J.J. Enagbare that is one of the most feared pass rushers in the SEC. You are adding Jordan Strawn, who led all of college football in the category that I just mentioned. You have Tonka Hemingway. You have Rick Sandage, who, by the way, was a four-star prospect out of Concord, North Carolina. You've got Jabari Ellis. My God, how does he almost slip? My big Jabari Ellis, truly one of the leaders of your defense and a true run stopper in the middle. You've got Mo Kaba. You've got Sherrod Green. You've got Debo Williams. You've got Cam Smith, who was a very, very highly regarded prospect. Jalen Dickerson, R.J. Roderick, right? Karan Prunty, you're adding. All the new guys, like I mentioned. You have talent. If nothing else, you've got a plethora of talent up front. And like I told you guys, I know you'd all agree, we have not seen the most out of the talent that has been on this football team and specifically on the defensive side. So why I think the Gamecocks defense will be better in this 2021 season, number one, they can't get any worse, right? But no, seriously, why they'll be better. I think what you saw last year, if you have the talent and things still aren't working out, it's coaching, right? That's a given. That's a no-brainer. It's coaching. And I think from what I've heard behind the scenes, in the building, whatever you want to call it, the schemes and the overall strategies, players were confused. They were asking players to do too much. And overall, the scheme was just bad. Guys, I had a current player tell me in December, and I won't name him, obviously. I had a current player, though, tell me in December, after the season was over, I asked him about the LSU game. Who can forget, right? I asked him about LSU. Hey, man, you know, they had a true freshman quarterback, or they had a freshman quarterback guy, never started a game. I thought we were going to blitz. Like, what was the issue? What happened? He said, well, we practiced blitz all week, and we got to the game, and they just didn't call it. Just mind-blowing stuff. So why I think the Gamecocks defense will be better in this 2021 season? A simplified scheme that maximizes athletes' abilities on defense. I know that sounds cliche. I know that sounds coach speak, but less is more, guys, and simplifying the defense. Hey, on defense, it's simple. Go be an athlete. See ball, get ball. You see the man with the ball, you go hit him. I'm not trying to, you know, dumb it down and say that it's easy and anybody can do it, but I think at times we just got way too complex in what we were trying to do. Hey, you have like a guy like Jordan Birch, a guy like Zach Pickens, but we'll stick with Birch. Fantastic athlete, right? Incredible athlete, a physical specimen, a freak. Let him go roam. Let him hunt. Let him hunt. Let him be. Let him use his God-given ability to wreak havoc on opposing offenses. Let him do that. Hey, my buddy that works personnel at Georgia told me, Chris, I'm telling you right now, if Jordan Birch ain't a first-round pick, y'all messed up, because that kid's got God-given ability. But I think when you're asking players to do 100 different things, you know what they can't do when they're thinking? They can't play fast. And when you can't play fast in this league, you're going to get burnt, you're going to blow coverages, and you're going to get embarrassed the way we saw a season ago. So again, I think with Clayton White, Torian Gray, Jimmy Lindsay, this entire defensive staff, why they'll be better, this new coaching staff bringing in a simplified scheme that maximizes our athletes' abilities on the defensive side, let them go play ball. And I think overall that will be a huge, huge reason you see this Gamecocks defense take a major step forward in 2021. Now, on the flip side, why I think the Gamecocks defense could or will be worse in the 2021 football season. Like I said, guys, I don't know how you can be worse than 36 points per game or 452 yards per game. And what blows my mind is those statistics were not last in the conference. I mean, there were some bad defenses in the SEC, but I don't know how you can be worse, right? But just for the sake of the argument, why the Gamecocks defense will be worse in the 2021 season, the losses in the secondary truly take their toll. You know, maybe, you know, like I said, the defensive front, I think we all feel pretty damn good in regards to what they're going to bring to the table and, you know, the type of impact they should be able to make. But, like I said, your leading returning defensive back has three career starts. Three, a grand total of three. That's not a lot. And depth is a serious concern and a real, real issue in the back half of your defense. You know, I've talked, maybe I'm not giving enough credit to, hey, maybe J.C. Horn and Ishmael Kwamu and Dixon and Jammy, maybe they were the ones holding together a horrific defense from possibly finishing 14th in the SEC. And so if that is the case, and those guys in the secondary don't come into their own and they're not the players we hope they are, then, hey, teams are just going to throw it on us all night long. And guess what's going to happen? The throw is going to open up the run. They're going to be able to do both. And we aren't going to stop a freaking nosebleed. Like I said, I don't know how you could be much worse than you were last year. But if you are going to be worse, it will be because the secondary is a complete and total bust in year one. And guys, like I said, if it is, here's the thing. I still think Torian Gray is a really good football coach. I love Clayton White as a DC, but truly in the secondary, a lot like the receiver position, the only way you're going to flip that room is in recruiting. That's the only way. You got to go out, and you've seen them do it, right, with guys like Keenan Nelson Jr., and they're getting these other guys in the secondary. They are recruiting the shit out of the defensive back position. I mean, they're recruiting the hell out of it, right? They're getting some big-time ball players. The only way you're going to flip a room like that is recruiting. So why they could be worse in this 2021 season, those losses in the secondary really proved to be a much bigger deal than even you or I are giving them credit for. All right, let's move into season will be successful if. And guys, I've been talking about them the entire show. It's no secret. The secret sauce with this defense is no secret at all. It's very simple. The season will be successful for the Gamecocks 2021 defense if the defensive line lives up to the hype. And I've written down a number here, 25 or more sacks in this 2021 football season. Listen, it's all going to come down to the line of scrimmage. It's all going to come down to, I mentioned the guys, but we'll go back down the list. J.J. Anibare, Aaron Sterling, Brad Johnson, Zach Pickens, Rick Sandage, Jabari Ellis, Tonka Hemingway, Jordan Birch, Jordan Strawn, who you added, Devontae Davis, who's back from injury. Am I forgetting? You know, the list just goes on and on. I mean, I just listed 10 guys. You have depth. You have size. You have athleticism. You have highly recruited guys. You have guys who have been developed. You've got a mix of every. You got 2 5-star players in the guys I mentioned, okay? 2 5-stars. The strength of this defense is no secret. It is a defensive front. It is that front seven. For the season to be successful for this Gamecocks defense this upcoming year, hey, we can talk about the secondary, and they've got to get better, and guys have got to come into their own. The linebackers are going to step up. But if that defensive line, if they don't live up to the hype, if they don't balls to the wall, ball out, and establish themselves as one of the top, I'd say probably 3 or 4 units in the conference, the Gamecocks defense will not take that step forward they are hoping for, right? A guy like J.J. Nibari, he's got to go off once again. Jordan Strawn, you better be able to adjust this league. Guys like Brad Johnson, Aaron Sterling, hey, I feel like they've kind of fallen off the map. You got to come back into your own. Those are two really, really good athletes, real big, strong, physical dudes. Jordan Birch and Zach Pickens, man, I could have just said those two guys are the key to this defense. Zach Pickens and Jordan Birch, you got to play like the 5 stars you are, man. Listen, stars aren't everything. They're not everything. But at South Carolina, you don't get enough of them to miss on them. So when you get a 5-star, they better pan out. We don't get enough of them for, oh, that guy's a bust. And no big deal. We just got 10 other 5-stars in our class. No. Not the case. You know, I was very, I'll say this. And again, I don't hold it against these guys because of last year, the staff and the madness and whatever. But Zach Pickens was a guy I looked at last year, somebody I was looking forward to him breaking out and being a big-time player and being a breakthrough player and, you know, kind of sort of filling in where Javon Kinlaw left off. And to be honest with you, he didn't do that. I didn't think he did. Jordan Birch, I know he was a true freshman last year, but he didn't do a whole lot that really made me say, oh, wow, he's an incredible player. And again, I think a lot of that is coaching. I know for a fact that a lot of that is coaching. Talking to some guys again that are in the building that they questioned the way Jordan Birch was used a season ago. So the season will be successful for the Gamecocks defense. Simply put, the defensive line lives up to the hype. If they live up to the hype, if they're as good as we believe they're going to be, and again, I've put the number at 25 plus sacks. That's averaging 2 sacks per game. I read the stats off earlier, but I will do it again. Last season, first 4 games, you had 10 sacks, you went 2-2. The rest of the season, your next 6 games, you had only 4 sacks, you went 0-6. And going back to 2016, Carolina is 13-2 when they generate 3 or more sacks in a game. Guys, getting to the quarterback, causing havoc, bringing pressure, you're going to have to do so for a secondary that'll be figuring it out on the go. You're going to have to do it in regards to stopping the run game. You're going to have to find a way to get into the backfield. So again, season will be successful for the Gamecocks defense in 2021 if that defensive line, we've been hyping them up a lot, they got to live up to it. When the lights cut on, they got to shine bright, period, point blank. All right, let's move to my prediction for the Gamecocks 2021 defensive unit. And like I told you guys, man, going back to the stats from last year, there's just no way this group can be worse than they were a year ago. There's just no way, right? There's just no way, right? Right? I mean, they did lose a lot. But there's no excuse, none, for how bad this defense was last year. None. I don't care that you played a 10-game conference schedule. I don't care that you might have had an injury or two. I don't care that your offense might. No, There was just no excuse for how bad this defense was. And when you have the type of talent that South kind of had last year defensively, and they were still that bad, I think we'd all agree it was coaching. No doubt. It was a coaching issue. So I think with the change of culture, the change of staff, Clayton White taking over, a fantastic group of assistants surrounding him, I do expect this Gamecocks defense to take a step forward. Again, how big of a step is that? Because the secondary is still a big question mark. I think linebacker is, you know, how good is Debo Williams? I think they're okay. I don't think linebacker is, you know, some outstanding position for us right now. I do love Mo Cabba's game. I think he's a guy that's very slept on. I think Mo Cabba's a very good player. Sherrod Green, it feels like he's been on campus for 17 years. Maybe he can, you know, be a nice piece for you, be a veteran leader. And, of course, like I mentioned, that defensive front, that is the strength. How big is the step, though? I think there will be an improvement, and I think there will be a step forward. I think it'll be led by that defensive line. I think the Gamecocks defense will hold their opponents to just under 30 points per game and right around that 400 yards per game mark given up. Again, I don't want to set too high of or even unfair expectations for South Carolina defensively this year, because there are still real issues, especially on the depth side of things, okay? And depth, especially on defense, is very, very, very important, I should say, especially in today's game of college football where guys are running, you know, spread, up-tempo. Like, depth's important. You got to have depth, and you got to have quality depth. I don't know that South Carolina's quite there yet to have – you know, they're certainly not on the level of 2011, 12, 13, where the Gamecocks were dominant defensively. You're not there yet. The only way you're going to be able to get there is in recruiting, no question. But I do see this unit making an improvement, taking a step forward, just under 30 points per game, around 400 yards per game. I think having your non-conference games is certainly going to help as well. And like I told you guys, even with the losses in the secondary, even with some of the other losses on defense, I just don't see any way this defense could be any worse. I think just simply from a coaching perspective and allowing your athletes to go be athletes, I think they'll be better. I do think they will be better. Now, some of the things I'm not factoring in, things like turnover margin, right? If this is a defense that's opportunistic and is able to, you know, get the football off of people and capitalize on turnovers, then who knows? Maybe that jump in year one is much bigger. But I think realistically, looking at what this group has to offer, looking at the losses, looking at the deficiencies, looking at the strengths as well, but keeping all that in mind, I think the statistics I've mentioned, you know, like I said, South Carolina, I think, is still going to have to outscore people. But if nothing else, I don't think you're gonna see there be a stretch like we saw a season ago where it's a three-week stretch and the Gamecocks have given up 159 points in a three-week stretch. I don't think you're going to see that. I hope you're not. I don't think you will. But I do think you'll see this defense take a step forward in Clayton White's first season as defensive coordinator. So, again, guys, that's going to do it for the Gamecocks defensive preview as we continue along the 2021 TSUS season preview series. Guys, Thursday's show, we will conclude the season preview series the upcoming season. We'll talk Gamecocks special teams, Beamer ball, but that's going to do it. Put a pin in the defensive preview. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, your expectations, your predictions. Do you agree, disagree with my thoughts on the defense? What are you expecting from Clayton White's unit in his first season as the defensive coordinator? All right, let's get into our news and notes, guys. We got to start here. A huge, huge note. A huge piece of news. And I know this was a couple of days ago, and I don't want to spend like 30, 40 minutes talking about it. I want to just touch on it really quickly, because until it's official, until it actually happens, you know, we're all just kind of just spitballing and throwing shit at a wall and seeing if it sticks, whatever. But the Texas and Oklahoma stuff and the shakeup in college football, you know, it was something I really doubted. I didn't think it was actually going to happen. I thought it was just like a publicity stunt. I thought Texas and OU were just kind of just shooting the shit, whatever. Oh, yeah, we're just... It sounds like it might actually happen. Now, had a lot of conversation about this Friday, Saturday, over the weekend. I am confident in what Shane Beamer's building, okay? I am. No matter who's in the conference, no matter who joins, none of it. Now, am I worried about the future of college football as a whole? A little bit. And I'm very intrigued at what this is going to mean for conferences like the Big 12 and just for everyone else in general. What are the dominoes that we see fall due to this, right? Do I love it from a college football fan perspective? Yes, I do. I think it's awesome. I think it's really cool. We're going to get to see some awesome matchups. I mean, hey, more great football, right? What could be better? From a South Carolina fan perspective, and I love the people on social media, by the way, are like, oh, you know, you're doubting Beamer. You don't believe in what he's building. Dude, shut up. Just stop. Okay. I can sit here and tell you guys from a South Carolina fan perspective, I don't love it. Okay. Here's why. To hell with the SEC, right? I don't give a damn. I'm not a conference pride guy. I truly don't get these people who go around beating their chest. Like they think it's some badge of honor that we're in the SEC. People saying, man, I'd rather go 5-7 or 6-6 every year than go 10-2 but play in the old ACC. Like, really? I mean, here's the thing. I know we love to talk shit about that team in the upstate. We love to do it, right? I love to do it. You love to do it. We all hate them. I get it. We do. But the whole schedule conference thing, this wiener measuring contest that people love to have between conferences, like, it's all fine and dandy. But guys, hear me out. While we are beating the SEC, I won't say we because I'm not in this. While people are beating the SEC drum, some South Carolina fans, not all of them, I wouldn't even say most of them, but while some people are stuck beating that SEC drum, okay, and having this ego and this pride about them that we play in the toughest conference and this, you know what they're doing? You know what they're doing? They are laughing their way all the way to the playoff every single year. So you know what? When it comes to conference pride and beating the drum and all that BS, now I'd much rather be in the playoff. Dude, I don't give a damn. I want to see my team win a ring. So when I say things, some of the things I said over the weekend, number one, it was to start banter, okay? When I said that, hey, if South Carolina ever wants to win a ring, it might be in their best interest to leave the conference. Now, granted, do I want to see South Carolina leave the SEC, guys? No. Again, it's all just a talking point amidst the madness of what is going on. But some of the reactions from some people, it's insane. You can't even talk about it. Like, dude, the point is made. The point is this. Hey, it's not going to happen. South Carolina's never going to leave the SEC. And I'm not saying they should. There are massive benefits to being in the best conference in college football, period, point blank. There are huge benefits. I would say to people that say, though, that, hey, it's huge for recruiting, I mean, number one, that upstate school, they haven't had any trouble recruiting, and they're not in the SEC. The other thing is that I think South Carolina could sell itself no matter the conference team. It doesn't matter. No matter the conference year, it doesn't change. You know, I know there's the selling point of, hey, the best football is played here. I totally get that. It is certainly a selling point, but it is one of many, many things that the University of South Carolina can sell to top prospects and top recruits. But I made the point of, hey, you know, if South kind of wants to win a ring, it's just, as from a South kind of fan perspective, I don't like it. I don't like it because I want to see the Gamecocks win an SEC title at some point, guys. Like, that is what I want to see South kind of get back to Atlanta and win the damn thing. And when you add teams like Texas and Oklahoma, and if you keep adding people, guess what? It just gets tougher and tougher and tougher. Again, I'm someone, I don't like to worry about things that are outside of my control. So I'm not necessarily like letting this Texas OU thing keep me up at night. But if you want my honest opinion on it, college football fan perspective, I love it. The South Carolina fan perspective, you know, it just man, like, shit, the road just got harder. So I guess just embrace it. Buckle up, whatever. College football is changing by the second, and all we can do is brace for it. But like I said, guys, I want to make it very clear. I'm not a conference pride guy. I don't really give a damn. Hey, all I worry about is what South Carolina's got going on. And with that being said, bring on Texas. Bring on OU. Hey, bring on Ohio State. Let Clemson join the SEC. Hell, I don't care. I believe in what Shane Beamer is building. I truly do. And hey, we'll take on whoever wants to line up across the field from us. Whatever. It is what it is. Looking forward to it. Beamer ball, Shane train, here we go. All right, more news and notes to get into. Big news of the Yardcocks is left-handed pitcher Julian Bosnick announces he will be returning for Mark Kingston's squad in 2021. Really big stuff. I think Bosnick is going to be a key contributor for Mark Kingston's team in the 2022 season. As expected, Brett Carey, Wes Clark, Brandon Jordan, and Thomas Farr have all signed their contracts. The only guy I think we're waiting on is Andy Peters. I think Danny Lloyd also I think we might be waiting on Danny, but Danny's definitely signing. The only guy we're waiting on right now is Andy Peters. I think he'll probably sign, guys, honestly. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I would expect that to happen probably this week. Last note really quickly, and some of you may moan and groan. Hell, you might cut this show off right now. Bannergate. Bannergate 2021. Oh, my goodness. What in the world? I mean, Shane Beamer tweets the picture of the old banner in the front of Willie B. It gets taken down, and a new banner gets hung, and Gamecock Twitter proceeds to lose their minds. Now, I want to say this. When the banner was initially put up, right, I did not want to be that guy. I did not want to be the stickler that was like talking about the shade and the color. I loved the simple messaging. I loved the palmetto tree. I loved the welcome home. Loved all of that, right? And I don't want to spend too much time on this because I could spend a lot of time on it, and I don't want to, okay? I don't know why garnet is such a hard color to nail down. I truly, guys, if you walk around, I'm not trying to be a stickler. It's a fact, though. You walk around our stadium right now, there's like four different shades of garnet on different signs, banners, whatever. And it doesn't make sense. I don't get it. I don't know why garnet, and I understand with different materials and all, I get that, but like, why is garnet so hard? Because here's the thing. For the people that were complaining about the people complaining, which is, I guess, kind of ironic in itself, but for the people that were complaining about the people complaining, here's the thing, guys. I would just say this, and I'll keep it short and sweet. If you're going to build an elite level football program, right? If you're going to be top notch, one of the best, right? If you can't get something right, that is as simple as your school's colors when you are hanging a banner, a sign. And I know some of you, well, are we really talking about a banner, man? I think the people that say that, they just want to avoid the conversation, right? They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to face it, because the fact of the matter is this, the banner and the sign above it did not match. They do not match. And I say that actually, and I'll say this. I have not seen it in person as of the time recording this right now. I am going to see it today, and I will be tweeting about it and letting you all know what it looks like, because I've seen some other pictures where it's like, you know, it's really not that bad. But of course, South Gunner released a statement. They are planning on changing it, getting a new banner. They said that it was a misprint or something. God, really, of all the things, man, we can't get a banner right. But, you know, Bannergate, it's a serious thing. Bannergate 2021, incredible, unreal. And it shows, by the way, the power of fans and social media, because people were not happy. I'll say this. Here's your solution. Just make the next banner black. Like, just avoid this and make it black. Boom, you're done. That's it. Keep the same thing, the palmetto tree, the welcome home. Make it black. Done. That's it. All right. Let's move into your questions. And before we do that, guys, just got an update. Just got a text from my guy, Dirt. Andy Peters has officially signed. Dirt, coming in the clutch. Thank you, Dirt. I appreciate it. Andy Peters has signed. So I guess basically that's, you know, I don't know if Danny Lloyd is official. I don't think Danny's official yet, but I'm like 99% sure Danny is going to sign. So that would mean out of the guys drafted, Julian Bosnick will be back. But again, congratulations to Andy Peters on signing. Okay, appreciate that, Dirt. Thank you so much for that. The in-show update. Let's get into your questions here. We'll start with Twitter. Elizabeth Ballard says, what will it take for our secondary to improve? Well, again, I think a simplified scheme is going to help those guys a ton. I thought you saw, you know, even with the talent we had, guys were confused. They were out of position. You saw blown assignments. And, you know, at some point you look at it and say, man, it's got to be a coaching thing. You just have too much talent to look that embarrassing and that foolish. I mean, who remembers the Ole Miss game, right, with the clipboard throw? I mean, how can you be that out of position? That's got to be a coaching thing. But I think a simplified scheme will help. But also, you need a lot of these new guys to step up. Caron Prunty's got to be the dude. Marcellus Dial needs to be an impact player. Tyrese Ross, he needs to step up. Cam Smith, he's got to come into his own as cornerback number one. No questions asked. He's got to be the guy there. And then from there, you got to have some youngsters and guys who are inexperienced, you know, step up. Bottom line, they got to step up and play well. So I think a mixture of those things, Elizabeth, I think you will see the secondary and those numbers improving. Like I said, how can it get any worse from what it was last season? Hayden Uzalak on Twitter says, any possible nicknames for the defensive line? Hayden, I believe in letting the nicknames come organically. So I'd say let's get closer to the season. Let's maybe get a couple games in the season, and we'll just kind of see if a nickname, you know, sort of comes about naturally. But I think putting a nickname on a defensive, on a position unit, I should say, or even an individual before they've even played a down, that's a little scary, right? Like the bus for Kevin Harris, that wasn't a predetermined nickname. That came about organically and naturally. Let the nicknames flow organically and naturally. That's how the best nicknames truly come about, in my opinion. So let's do that. Billy Papa DePoulos, at GC Billy. I'm sorry for butchering that. At GC Billy, you can correct me hopefully in the DMs. He says, what will be the scheme? 4-3, 3-3-5, 4-2-5. Will the DBs concede 5-plus yards, play off their assignments like we saw endlessly under Muschamp? So it'll be 4-2-5. That's been predetermined, 4-2-5. As far as the secondary, listen, here's the thing. Every coach wants to play that bump man coverage, right? They all do. They want to play that. But it doesn't come down to what you want to play. It's what can your guys do realistically. And, you know, I guess what you saw. And Muschamp was also a guy, he loved to try to avoid the big play, right? The explosives, limit the explosives. And I think we got so caught up in that at times, though, that, man, we're just giving 5, 7, 8 yard slants and curls. And, I mean, it's just, it was brutal, right? That bend but don't break. Like I told you, between the 20s, soft as hell, tried to strengthen up in the red zone. So, I think we'll see more aggressiveness. I think with Torian Gray, I think you'll see more aggressiveness in the secondary. How much more? Because of the options you have, I don't know. But I like to think there will be more aggressiveness in that secondary. Krusty Andy, what do you expect from Burch this season? I think he's going to blow up. I think he's going to have a huge year. I think Jordan Burch is going to play like the five-star Jordan Burch we recruited him to be. I think he'll be a big-time impact player for us this year, Krusty Andy. Good question. Matthew_Sat65, and these are on Instagram, by the way. Matthew Sat says, how much can the secondary improve from last year? I would say a lot. Again, I don't think you can get any worse. Rocco Fokker Smith, do you think the pass defense is better or worse compared to last season? Better. Austin_G_45 says, what does our new look secondary look like, and what impact can they have in year one? A lot of secondary questions. Again, the guys I mentioned, Cam Smith, DB1, Caron Prunty, really 1A, 1B, and those two guys, Dickerson Roderick in the back. I think Joey Hunter, you know, Jalen Foster, by the way, O'Donnell Fortune, Marcellus Dial, Tyrese Ross, those guys will all play and make an impact. And I think they'll be better, like I said. Ecart08, how does Justin Stepp fix the drop issues with wide receivers? So a question about offense, but a good question. You know, there's only so much you can do in a jugs machine. It's about making those plays in the game. I think it's all a mental thing, dude. It's not a physical thing, right? These guys have caught thousands of passes. You wouldn't be at this level if you couldn't catch the football. It's all mental. Can Justin Stepp break through with them mentally? Gavin Lawless, other than Sherrod Green, who steps up at linebacker? I'm hoping Mo Kaba. Not good if it's Staley. I mean, I'm not going to say not good if it's Staley, but I do think Mo Kaba. I like Mo Kaba a lot. I think he's going to be a baller for us. Bradley Oliver_95, expectations for Zach Pickens and Burch this year. I think they both ball out. I think Jordan Burch is a huge year. I think Pickens will be very, very solid in the middle. I mean, he's a monster in that middle. I think both guys play really well, and they have to. Like I said, you're five-star guys. You simply don't get enough of them to miss on guys like that. I think both have big years this year. Scott W. Lawson, in what ways will the new defensive scheme look differently moving forward? Again, the 4-2-5, I think you'll see them be more aggressive. And I think, like I said, letting our athletes just be athletes. Scott W. Lawson, again, who will be DB2 behind Cam, and who will be the new Ernest Jones of the defense? I think it's Caron Prunty. Hell, Caron Prunty might be DB1. Who knows? The new Ernest Jones, you know, people have said Debo Williams, but I think it's got to be J.J. Nibare, man. He or Jabari Ellis. I think Jabari Ellis is certainly a leader as well. Wyatt Mills, biggest weak point of the defense, secondary, no question. JB Goodlow, 33. What young linebacker steps up this year? I'll tell you this. You know what linebacker I think is going to step up? Not a young guy, but Rescindo Lewis. I think he finally comes into his own and will play for us this year. What type of impact? I don't know, but I think he'll play for us, no question. Shavala 10. How many yards will Clemson throw on us? Lowercase c is important. Don't give them respect. God, I probably too many. Unfortunately, probably too many. Let's see. Cody Hames, my biggest concern is how the secondary will communicate. I think communication will be fine. It's lack of depth that concerns me. Gab 3 underscore M3, what are your thoughts on OU and Texas joining the SEC? Again, I talked about it earlier, but hey, bring it on. Whatever. Shane Train, Beamer Ball, all aboard. To hell with them. Horns down. To hell with OU. I don't know. Last question. It's fitting, too. B underscore Deuce underscore Fishing. All he says is secondary. I agree. Secondary. Secondary indeed. For sure. Again, guys, appreciate the listener questions. Man, thank you all so much, dude, for the love and support. It's been incredible. I appreciate y'all sincerely being interactive with those questions, right? Like the questions segment wouldn't be quite as fun if you guys were not interactive, if you guys were not engaging. And again, for that, I truly, truly do appreciate the love and support. Guys, if you're wondering why I sound like I'm kind of like delaying the interview, I am a little bit, and that's because I am looking for our new ad read with our friends over at Manscaped. Because the interview today, and conversation, I should say, actually, Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews. Great stuff. You remember, had him on the show last year. You can find his work, picksixpreviews.com. Incredible stuff. He does a phenomenal job in regards to breaking things down. You know, we talked to Phil Steele before. This is one of the best, if not the best magazine in the game, guys, an up-and-comer. And I really respect Brett because he's a lot like myself in the sense of a one-man show, came from nothing. He's been grinding. He's been, hitting it hard, getting this thing going, getting it off the ground, and Pick Six Previews now, guys. You can see it. You can look at it. It's one of the best magazines, if not the best, like I said, in the entire industry. And we talked all thing Gamecocks, SEC, breaking down Shane Beamer, all that good stuff, guys. So, again, sit back, relax, enjoy. Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Preview, the conversation, all brought to you by our friends. We finally have it pulled up over at Manscaped. Guys, the sun's out, bums are out, hopefully your pubes aren't out. Also, flip-flop season's upon us, and you're out here with those post-pandemic toenails. Guys, don't worry, our friends at Manscaped have you covered. They just launched their fourth generation performance package and their Shears 2.0 nail grooming kit. Join the Manscaped movement by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the promo code TSUS20. Guys, we've all been there, right? We're trimming, we're cutting, we nick ourselves, we're bleeding, it hurts, it stings, it sucks. Leave that in 2020. The Performance Package 4.0 includes the new Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer will change the way you approach your grooming routine. Guys, the fourth generation trimmer features advanced skin-safe technology to reduce grooming accidents. You don't want any ingrown hairs or snags on your boys before beach season. The Lawnmower 4.0 is a 7,000 RPM motor and an on-off travel lock, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off. Guys, if the power grid goes out in Texas again, you can use your Lawnmower 4.0 to illuminate the way with this LED spotlight. The trimmer is also waterproof, so you can trim in the shower, not worry about your cleanup or on ILD. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. This nose and ear trimmer provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those sensitive little nostrils of yours. Guys, use the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner to keep you on your game in the heat. Guys, Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. Guys, the Shears 2.0 is a luxury four-piece nail kit featuring tempered stainless steel tools, and it includes slashed-tipped tweezers, rounded point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. You're probably wearing flip-flops and people don't want to see those nasty unclipped toes of yours. Guys, get yours today. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code TSUS20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the promo code TSUS20 at manscaped.com. Tame that summer swamp in your pants with Manscaped. Again, guys, appreciate you all tuning in. Now enjoy this conversation with Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews. All right, joining us today on the Spurs Up Show, guys, very excited in the spirit of preseason magazine season. Of course, you guys know a couple of weeks ago we talked to Phil Steele. You might remember from last year, friend of the show, we had him on, does a fantastic job with Pick Six Previews, which if you have never checked out Pick Six Previews, I highly recommend it. Guys, you're not going to find, I'll just go ahead and say, you're not going to find a more in-depth or accurate magazine on the market right now. Nowhere else you can find this. Brett Ciancia, the founder, the owner of Pick Six Previews, good buddy of mine, friend of the show. He joins us once again to talk Gamecocks football. And of course, Brett, I know you're a really popular guy right now with media days happening. And I'll say this, Brett, it feels really good, which by the way, appreciate you taking the time, but it feels really good to be chatting with you right now. When I think back to last year, it was almost a year to the date. How much different things were. And we didn't even really know if we were going to have a season. You and I both stayed positive, though, held out hope. We all know what happened. The rest is history. But Brett, again, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Chris, again. And you're right to bring up last year where it was pretty negative all summer. Me and you were trying to keep it positive, trying to find a feasible way for the season to happen. We got somewhat of a season. I mean, hey, we crowned a national champion, we crowned conference titles and a Heisman winner. So it was a complete year. But yeah, definitely more excited for 2021 with the return of fans to the stands. I think this is the most anticipated college football season in my memory. So I think just from reading off the vibe of college football nation right now. But yeah, so you're right. Once the confetti drops in January on the national title stage, I begin my preparation and work on my annual season preview book. So I launched here in 2012. It's my 10th season. And over those first 9 years, I've been graded the most accurate Power Five preview in America. That's compared to all the magazines that you see on newsstands, everything else online. My Power Five predictions were number one. So, and then after 2019, I got my Heisman Trophy ballot. So really excited to be back. I can't believe it's the 10th annual, but this one was the most fun to put together, given how exciting the season's going to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the place might cave in, Williams-Brice Stadium, on September the 4th. I don't know if there's ever been as highly an anticipated matchup for an FCS opener for the Gamecocks than there is this year, but obviously with Shane Beamer being a first-year head coach and the optimism, excitement he's brought, which we're going to get into more in just a second. Of course, I'm sure you can understand why. But yeah, like you said, 10th annual season preview, man. I want to say congratulations to you, obviously. Again, picksixpreviews.com, correct, Brett, is where people can get the magazine. Picksixpreviews.com?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. Thank you for that.
Picksixpreviews.com. Definitely head over there. I've actually got it pulled up right now as we're chatting. But I want to go back, Brett, because obviously not only did the world look a lot different, but South Carolina football looked a lot different at this time of year goes well, because there was a completely different staff and a different head coach in place. I want to talk about just briefly the 2020 season, because as I joked with you off air, you know, I love how you break down the everything statistically, offensively, defensively. I mean, you break it down to the nitty gritty. And when you have your rankings, you have a color coding system, green or dark green being you're one of the best in the country, yellow being you're kind of in the middle, and red and a dark red being you're near the bottom of college football. And of course, the Power Five for sure. There is a lot of red and dark red when it comes to South Carolina statistically, especially on the defensive side. But the 2020 season, again, when we talked a year ago, Will Muschamp was coming in his fifth year. And I know a lot of our conversations, you know, centered around what he had to do to, you know, maintain his job, if you're going into 2021, coming into this season. But were you surprised the Gamecocks pulled the trigger on him when they did? Were you also surprised in the amount of coaching turnover? Because I think many of us at this time last year said, oh, COVID, you know, it's a mulligan, you know, with the economic ramifications and all that, you know, that nobody will make a change. There were tons of change made in the SEC. It wasn't just South Carolina. You saw Jeremy Pruitt get the axe, Gus Malzahn, Derek Mason. It feels like there was just as much turnover, if not more, than most years. But with South Carolina, their struggles defensively, and we talked about what an indictment that would be on Muschamp. You know, you list it right here in your magazine. You mentioned the three games against LSU, A&M, Ole Miss, you know, LSU with forced 0 punts, 0 sacks, lost 48-3 against A&M, outrushed 264-50, and then Ole Miss allowed 59 points and 700 yards. It really did feel like the perfect storm in regards to South Carolina pulling the trigger and paying the buyout. But when you looked at the South Carolina situation specifically, were you surprised the Gamecocks made the move when they did?
Yeah, Chris, you're right on with the assumption we all made in the media and as fans everywhere that 2020 was going to be kind of a freeze on firings. And, you know, everyone gets kind of a mulligan year with an asterisk. But You know, lo and behold, it was like the Wild Wild West as usual with the coaching carousels and the firings and hirings, crazy stories. So with the Will Muschamp looking at South Carolina on a macro level, they kind of, you know, they made the hire to design it to make one side of the ball elite. I think when you hire Muschamp, you think, all right, we at least want to lock down a top three defense in the SEC and really build around an elite defense. And see if we can scrape up enough offense to make it work. And the first 3 years, they averaged number five in the SEC and on defense. So top five, and it was enough to grind out a couple winning seasons and bowl games. But really the pivot point was 2019 when you know, they were top five those first 3 years. His fourth year, they dropped to eighth. And then this year, 2020, fell all the way to 11th on defense. So when you make a hire like that and your one side of the ball that you're trying to make elite just totally collapses, that's not a good sign. And like you mentioned there, you know, bottom 10 in so many national categories on defense. I think it was third down defense, bottom 10, passing defense, quarterback rating, so many numbers. So when you're the angle of the team you wanted to build into an elite, you know, crutch falls down like that, that's terrible. So, yeah, you mentioned those three huge losses, the LSU, the A&M, the Ole Miss, those were bad. You know, losing 17 of their last 23 games is bad. You're at 6-17 recently. And then obviously six straight to Clemson, and they're not even competitive. It's by an average margin of 24 points to Clemson. So, and then the first back-to-back bowl-less season since 2003. So yeah, a lot of factors there. Once the curtain was lifted on the hirings and firings and coaching carousel, it kind of made sense from an outsider's perspective to move on. And maybe start to modernize that offense, which looks like they accomplished.
Yeah, before we get into Shane Beamer, Brett, I want to stay on 2020 because you mentioned the defensive statistics, and I can't just help stare at them right here in your magazine. And as a football guy, how shocking was it to you how bad the defense was? Because you look at last year and you talk about in your magazine, and of course, you know, others have talked about it. I mean, J.C. Horn, Isher Mukwamu, John Dixon, you know, Jamie Robinson, it just simply with that defensive line as well, it just simply did not make sense just how porous they were. And, you know, I know you talk about, you know, maybe they're going to try to simplify things. And yes, that sounds like coach speak, but it just the talent they had on the roster on the defensive side specifically and the numbers, I mean, they just don't add up. Because 2019, if you remember, Brett, they got a little bit of a pass because people said, oh, the offense was so bad, it put them in really bad position. There was no excuse for a defense last year that gave up 36 points per game and 452 yards per game with the type of talent they had on that side of the ball. I mean, you saw it in the NFL draft with both J.C. Horn and Israel McCormick getting drafted. How shocking was that to you, how bad they were on that side of the ball?
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, well, first off, when you look at the recruiting trend, just for some kind of talent background, you know, on a high level, they're top 20. They're top 20 over the last couple of years, last 5 years, 3 year average, everything. So, you know, you're starting with a core of a top 20 recruiting base. And then to see that not converting into wins or even to competent play on the field, it means a couple of things. Either that scheme was a bad scheme, it was too complex to install in the short offseason, or just they weren't developing players. And, you know, part of the magazine, I do take it one step further than just recruiting rankings. I have my win conversion metric and my player development metric, which, you know, compares your raw recruiting average to what you actually do with it, you know, because a lot of has to happen on those 3 or 4 years on campus for players. So how are you converting that into wins and into NFL draft picks? And South Carolina over the Muschamp era, bottom five in both, just really struggling in that regard in relation to their recruiting profile. So, but more specifically to this defense, yeah, the defensive line had star power on paper. You know, luckily that's coming back for 2021. But still, there were, you know, you had Big Kingsley there in the middle, in the defensive line, the sack master. And then you had a couple of five stars with Pickens and Birch. You had just figured that front seven would be a little bit stronger. And then you mentioned the secondary, star power galore, two NFLers. And Jamie Robinson was getting some all SEC preseason pub too. John Dixon, another, you know, quality player. The news here is that all four of those are gone. So, at least for 2021, they retain that star power up front. The secondary really underperformed statistically to what I'd have expected. And then the linebackers, they struggled more and more as the season went on. I know that in their case, they were riddled by injuries a bit and started to wear down in this all SEC 10-game, you know, slate last year. But yeah, overall, as a unit, you'd expect a lot more, especially given that's supposed to be the strong point of the staff. And, you know, to see it collapse like that, coming off of an already struggle in 2019. I think that was the reasoning for the firing.
Yeah, and I know, Britt, we talked a lot last year because it was something that was so glaring in regards to your conversion metrics in regards to the recruiting classes, how well you recruit versus your win total, and does that translate? It does not. Like you mentioned, South Carolina was bottom five, and I think certainly when people look back, that was an indictment on the last regime, was not being able to convert the talent they got on campus into wins. And I'll share you with this, Brett, and then we'll move into the Shane Beamer hire and everything else. But I went on a show a couple of weeks ago, the Sports Objective, which they cover the East Carolina Pirates, do a really good job doing so. But he phrased it for me in a way that I'd never really thought of before. And he said this, he said, if you have a coaching staff that can recruit, but cannot develop the top talent, that if you've got a coaching staff, they're bringing in 4- and 5-star talent, but they can't develop them. Well, in 3 or 4 years, you're just going to have a roster full of 4- and 5-star high school players, which does no good for you at the college level. And I'd never heard it phrased that way, but it's so true. And I feel like that's kind of the trap South kind of has fallen into in the last couple of years. Because again, one of my favorite graphics you do, man, is the 10-year recruiting trend. And like you said, the way that they're able to convert the recruiting trend into wins. I mean, South Carolina's never really struggled in recruiting in regards to like being very far or at all being outside of the top 25, yet they have not been able to turn that into wins for whatever reason. And of course, that is why now Shane Beamer takes over as head coach. So the Gamecocks pull the trigger, Brett. I want to go back to that. The coaching search begins, of course, and it was the Wild Wild West, but South Carolina lands on Shane Beamer, which I think I'm sure you can feel this from the fan base just looking on social media, a very popular hire. Gamecock fans are ecstatic. You know, most people are saying he won SEC Media Days. He crushed it at SEC Media Days. But I want to read an excerpt from your magazine that I thought was really interesting. You said this, and I quote, using the age-old, quote, hire the opposite method, rather than a defensive-minded, experienced SEC head coach, South Carolina chose a charismatic former wide receiver who has never been a head coach or offensive coordinator or coordinator in general. I'm not sure if Gamecock fans will love this or hate it, but that description sounds eerily similar to the 2-time national championship coach located 2 hours northwest of Columbia. And I will agree with you. It makes my stomach turn because there's been a lot of that comparison, and you never really want to compare yourself to your hated rival, right? You never want to be like, let's just draw a bunch of comparisons and just talk about how we're so similar to our rival, right? Either way, though, the point stands, going to a more CEO approach, a coach who, while he maybe has never been a coordinator, never been, you know, a head coach, of course, but never a coordinator, certainly, a guy who can take over as the CEO, can handle the recruiting, can hire really good coaches around him and let them do the coaching. But what did you expect from South Carolina on the coaching search? And when they landed on Shane Beamer, what were your initial thoughts on that hiring?
Yeah, great point there. Thanks for reading the Dabo comparison quote there. It was interesting. I mean, I didn't want to throw it in there. I was going to, and then I was
no. Like, hey, I've had alums and guys that are, you know, played football at South Carolina. A lot of people have been very openly comparing it. You know, he's a lot like Dabo Swinney. He's a lot like that CEO type, and it's like, I understand that, and I totally get that. I know that's kind of the next wave of coaches, but it's still just, it's like, can't we find another comparison? I mean,
you know. Right. I know. Well, yeah, it's funny. I mean, well, right away when I heard the news, it seemed a little bit out of left field, because usually you think of in the SEC, it's a very tight knit, like, you know, the SEC programs will hire an SEC coordinator from another SEC school. Right. But in this case, he wasn't a coordinator, offense or defense, I believe special teams, but kind of out of left field. Wasn't a former head coach anywhere. You know, like sometimes you see teams hire up like a group of five guy that's been great at the head coaching role. But yeah, so it was kind of out of left field. But when you dug into it a little bit, it started to make sense. You know, he's got all the charisma needed down there to recruit. You saw that at media day. You hit on that. He was drawing great reviews from his first media day. And I'm sure that converts into the living room when he's recruiting. So, you know, charisma's there. And then the other thing is the staff building around him. So if you're going to be that CEO type, you got to be able to put a great staff around you. And I like what he did in terms of modernizing the offense, where, you know, spending 3 years alongside Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, he learned that offense, you know, that recent offensive innovation, probably the best in the game. And went and hired a guy who was exposed to the other one, LSU, that Joe Brady offense from 2019. So with a mix of, you know, those LSU air raid roots, and then what he learned at Oklahoma, which was air raid pass concepts blended with a physical downhill run game. That's kind of a mischaracterization you see when you think of Oklahoma as an SEC fan or a national fan. You just think, oh, they're the air raid, Mike Leach. Mm. Not so much. It's really, yes, they have some of those concepts in the pass game, but they want to just smack you in the mouth in a downhill run game. So it's a good balance, good blend. So I'm excited, you know, because when you look at the SEC, you saw it last year in 2020. It was an offensive explosion. It was modernization across the board. No longer is that 1980 style, that I formation power run game. I don't think that's going to work anymore. Mm. So I think that it was at least staying afloat or treading water, whatever you want to call it, with this offensive evolution in the SEC right now. So schematically, it seems like a good hire on paper, and you know, charisma wise, it looks great. And it seems like the fan base is re-energized and all together, you know, unified, which wasn't the case a few years ago. So I think, yeah, so far so good.
Yeah, I think, Brett, you certainly hit on it, the modernization of the offense. Because I think right now in current day college football, when you're in the midst of building a program, I look at Ole Miss last year. You know, they weren't a great football team by any stretch, but they were fun to watch. And the thing that kills you when you're, like you were saying, trying to do the whole 1980s offense and run the eye, you can't be bad and boring. If you're not going to be a really good team, you better at least be entertaining. And how do you do that in modern day college football, or really sports in general? You score, and you score points, and you score a lot of points. Now, the number one question I'd say, Brett, Gamecock fans have right now is on the offensive side, and just what is the offensive identity going to be of this football team? You mentioned Shane Beamer under Lincoln Riley, what he learned at Oklahoma. And I agree with you. You know, Shane talked about it, but Oklahoma's not just this air raid, throw it 70 times a game. They really, really like to run the football, and they run it very, very well. They establish the running game. And then you talk about Marcus Satterfield, a guy that I think Gamecock fans had sort of a, you know, some mixed emotions about. He wasn't maybe the high-profile coordinator hire that some were clamoring for, but obviously is a veteran of the game, spent time under Joe Brady. And I believe, Brett, you know, this offense, what Shane Beamer and Marcus Satterfield want to do maybe isn't necessarily what they're going to do, at least to a full extent this year, because I really do believe, and I think fans are actually excited for this, you've got to play to what your personnel allows. And I expect Shane Beamer and Marcus Satterfield to do that again. It's no secret what the Gamecocks offer offensively with Kevin Harris, Marshawn Lloyd, four or five starters in the offensive line back, deficiencies at wide receiver, but a very athletic quarterback in Luke Doty. What do you expect offensively from the Gamecocks? Do you expect them? I think they should probably be a 70-30 run to pass team. You'd like to be more balanced, I understand, but this team, its strength is running the football. It starts there with South Carolina. I believe, Brett, I'll put this out there. I believe in games where the Gamecocks throw the ball 30 times or more. I don't think they'll win a single one of those. I think the key to success for South Carolina in 2021 is going to be get the ball in the hands of those fantastic backs, ride a big offensive line, pick and choose your matchups when you got them now. Pick and choose your matchups on the outside, but use the athleticism of Luke Doty, use your running backs, use the running game, and I think that's going to be the key to success for South Carolina. How do you see? Am I close? How do you feel like this offense will look in 2021?
Yeah, I think you're close. I think that their end goal as an offense is what you picture at LSU in 2019 and what you've seen at Oklahoma the last couple of years. And when you look at those rosters, really what stands out is a total arsenal of firepower at receiver. Just NFL guy after NFL guy, five-star receivers, like they can go eight deep at receiver. So, you know, to get to that final evolution of the offense, I don't think South Carolina's there yet. You mentioned it looks like somewhat of a deficiency at wide receiver right now. I mean, there's a lot of familiar names there, but you know, injuries and drops and a lack of development really has held them back. And you lose Shy Smith, who had such a high proportion of those targets and receptions. One of the most unbalanced I've seen, actually, when you look at all these rosters. He had, I think it was 57 receptions compared to the other guys had like 30. So
yeah, you said the next four behind him had a combined 35 catches. The leading receiver coming back this year had 11 catches a season ago. So, I mean, you're right. Yeah. It was complete just discrepancy there.
So not just even in stats, but in drops and performance. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they have that elite stable of receivers and firepower yet. So then the next question is, yeah, play to your strengths. This is going to be somewhat of a transition year as a program, but also as an offense. So play to your strengths. I like that offensive line, that trio of Wanham, Gwynn, and Douglas up there. They started all 10 games last year. We're able to establish a top 10 first down push in run push. They opened up holes for Kevin Harris to become the school's 9,000 yard rusher. And that was without a five star Marshawn Lloyd. So heck of a duo there. It looks like a stout run game. So I think what you do as an offense is play to that. Also play to that dual threat element that Luke Doty brings. And, you know, he's athletic there. That's something that dual threat element is something that South Carolina hasn't seen in quite some time. So I think you play to quarterback design runs, some zone reads, some optionality of it, and power that run game home and just see if you can start to develop some receivers, you know. But in the meantime, before you get that full arsenal of receivers, I think just play to the strengths.
Now, Brett, let's switch to the defensive side because it's really interesting. I continue to go back and forth on this. Obviously, Clayton White takes over as DC. He's implementing the 4-2-5 defense, which Gamecock fans are very familiar with. It's what they ran when they were most successful under Steve Spurrier, you know, winning 11 games, three straight years, and the most successful run of Carolina football. But when you talk defense, it's very easy to look at the numbers last year, look at who they lost, and say, oh, this defense is just going to be terrible. They're going to be even worse than they were a year ago. And you look at what they return on the defensive line, Brett, and you talk about the talent, how they recruited. I mean, J.J. Ngbare and Jordan Burch and Zach Pickens and Rick Sandage and Tonka Hemingway and Aaron Sterling. They add Jordan Strawn out of the transfer portal from Georgia State, who literally led all of college football in sacks a year ago. Obviously, the secondary is a major question mark, but I think Shane Beamer's done a really, really good job, as good a job as you could ask, you know, plugging holes there in the transfer portal with Karan Prunty, who is a Big 12 freshman All-American a year ago. But I look at this defense, Brett, and while they lose J.C. Horn, Isher Mukwamu, and I don't think it's necessarily going to be a strength or a top half of the league defense, but I ask this question to you simply, Brett. How can they be any worse than they were a year ago? I mean, we're talking 36 points per game and 452 yards per game. They can still be a below average unit and be, I think, far better than they were in 2020. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, the floor is pretty low there. It's going to be hard to be worse statistically than what we saw last year. I mean, you're talking about some of the worst in the conference, worst in the nation in pass defense in a lot of categories. So, yeah, I think it's only to go up from there, especially that firepower on the defensive line. I know I hit it on it earlier in the show, but definitely a positional unit that stands out for South Carolina. I have them in the top half of my positional rankings in the SEC at sixth along the defensive line. And again, it's that you know, that duo of five stars that I really think takes the next step this year. You have Zach Pickens there, made an impact as a sophomore starter last year. He's going to take another step. And then you know, Jordan Burch, the hometown kid, it's, you know, what a nice weapon for White to use in this defense, whether it be at outside backer at you know, some kind of edge rusher defensive end. I think he's been playing at edge. But still, I mean, there's firepower up front. I really like it. The 4-2-5 schematically, I like it. I like that move too. It brings another defensive back onto the field. And like we just mentioned about the modernization of offenses, you know, you're not going up against this. Teams aren't trying to beat you in a phone booth anymore. It's more spread out. It's more passing, right? So I like the you know, the trading some size for speed on the outside. So it's a matter of who's going to fill those roles, though, in the secondary. You know, some guys had some limited action last year and flashed some brilliance at times. But, yeah, you lose a lot of veterans and who had at one time been star players. So, yeah, but the good thing, so for South Carolina and all these programs out there going through coaching changes in 2021, you at least benefit from this full offseason to implement new schemes and for the coaches to get to know the roster. You didn't have that last year, so you at least timed that up well. And also, it's going to be a whole new time with this transfer portal to see if coaches and new staffs can really accelerate the rebuild process. Because it used to be, hey, you took over a program, you need three whole years and whole recruiting classes to really get your guys, as they call it, you know, your guys into the program. In this case, I mean, you could do it overnight. So we'll see if they hit home on a lot of these transfers that you mentioned, if they specifically fit into the mold and the scheme that they want, and if these rebuilds can become quicker. So that's, you know, you're one of the case studies out there in this 2021 transfer portal year. So we'll see.
Now, Brett, when we talk about this 2021 season, the conversation moves to first-year expectations. And I think what's different about this year than last year, amongst tons of other things, but this time last year, we didn't even know what the schedule was going to look like. So I had not put my predictions out there, Brett. Well, I'm happy to say I've actually got my predictions documented. They are locked in for this season. I got the Gamecocks going 6-6, 3-5 in the SEC. And I'm going to get into your East and West and champion in just a second. You and I actually have the East picked exactly the same. So you and I are very similar thought process there, but I got South kind of going 6-6 this year. But one of the fun things about what I do and the hype train, if you will, of Shane Beamer and what he's done and what he's building in the positive momentum is keeping expectations in year one realistic. And I thought Shane Beamer, Brett, did a beautiful job. You know, he was asked that a ton Monday at SEC Media Days, but when he went on with Paul Feinbaum, brought this up and said, hey, your fan base is really excited. You know, they're saying you're going to win 7, 8, 9 games. Like, how do you keep expectations realistic, keep them in check? What are you expecting in year one? And I thought he did a really good job, and I'm paraphrasing, Brett, of saying, you know, there's a reason I was hired. We were a 2-win team last year. I would be naive to say there are not holes on this roster. So that is the way I look at it. That's the way he looks at it. And I think Gamecock fans need to be patient and let Shane Beamer build his program. However, Brett, on the flip side, I look at your 10-year recruiting trend. And there are many fans that will look at a graphic like this and say, you know, eliminate the 2021 year, which, you know, you go through a coaching change. Shane Beamer's put in an impossible situation. They brought in like 12 or 13 guys in the transfer portal that didn't count in the class. You look at the recruiting classes, 2020, they were 18th. 2019, 17th, 2018, 18th. Even with that 78th ranked class last year, the 5-year trend is 28th in the country. So some fans, Brett, will say, well, hey, we've got talent on our roster. We should go out there and win 6 games, win 7. Hell, maybe mess around and win 8. When you look at Shane Beamer's first season, I know you've got the schedule here, of course. We all know the schedule at this point. It sets up very well in the first half for South Carolina. There are some games early on. I think the Gamecocks have to win to get to a bowl game. I've already said, you know, Brett, that the game week 2 at East Carolina, that's actually my most important game of the year. That's one that South Carolina to get the 6 wins. They absolutely have to win. You've got swing games early in Kentucky, at Tennessee, you look at that game at Missouri, you look at that game against Auburn late in the season. You know, some great opportunities for Carolina football, I think, to get to a bowl game in Shane Beamer's first year. But when you look at this football team overall, because there is talent on this roster, but again, I would say there are certainly holes and deficiencies. How do you look at this team? What are realistic first-year expectations for you, and how do you project? I won't ask you to pinpoint a record, but how do you project his first year going in Columbia?
Yeah, well, I think, there's still some distance between competing for the East title. I think Georgia has really asserted themselves as a playoff contender this year. Florida, of course, was, you know, top 10 and one of the best offenses last year. So those two are kind of 1 and 2 and a pretty sizable gap from there. I like what Kentucky has. They're a very proven commodity now with I almost called him Bob Stoops, with Mike Stoops. The way that they built up this power running attack and this offensive line keeps reloading. I like them at 3. Then, from 4, 5, and 6, that's kind of wide open, to be honest. I think that I end up putting Missouri 4th. I like that they had some continuity with their coach, a second year bonus with Drinkwitz, enough talent across the way. But really came down to a 5th versus 6th debate for me between South Carolina and Tennessee in the East. And I sided with South Carolina. I put South Carolina 5th there. I liked what they had on paper compared to what Tennessee has. I think the transition that Beamer's undertaking, I think, will be a little bit more seamless, a little bit easier of a transition than what Tennessee's trying to do. Total revamp of their offense. I mean, I'm talking going from that really old-fashioned style to the UCF hyper-tempo system. I don't know if that's going to translate. Plus, so many of their star players transferred out. 26 roster guys transferred out. 26 scholarship guys, I mean. The most we've seen ever in a cycle. So Tennessee's going through a massive transition. So I like South Carolina right there in the middle of the pack of the East. And you're right, the way this schedule unfolds, there's some winnable games in the first half. A very, very decent shot at going 5-2 to open it up, heading down to Texas A&M in their 8th game. The FCS game, of course, you win that one. I'll be honest, I don't know much about East Carolina. I don't include the AAC in my book. I know that they always play some teams tough down there, but I assume you'll win that one. So 2-0, and then you're talking Georgia, Kentucky. I think that's probably 2 losses this year. But here's the important part, this early October. If you can take care of Troy and Vanderbilt and win that swing game at Tennessee, you're talking about a 5-2 start to the year. That's a, you know, as an SEC team, 5-2, you're almost in that others receiving votes category, and you're starting to get some perception. You know, college football is so much driven by perception. If you can carry that 5-2 record there into November, that'd be pretty important. So down the stretch, you know, A&M and Florida will be tough. Clemson obviously will be tough too. And a couple other swing games, Missouri and Auburn, those are up for grabs. Auburn in another coaching transition year, just like you guys are in. I have them towards the bottom of the West Division, albeit a very talented division. So, I mean, I see it. You're right on the head with six. I mean, I see four guaranteed wins. I see five pretty much lock losses right now. And the three swing games would be Tennessee, Missouri, Auburn. You win two of those, you're bowling. So that's how I see it shaking out. But high enough to strike up to fourth, I think, in the SEC East.
Yeah, I think anywhere between 5-7 and 7-5 is a fair pick for this South Carolina team. And it, like you said, it'll all come down to those swing games, like you mentioned. I couldn't agree more with you, Rhett. Let's talk about overall SEC, your East and West and champion. You've gotten the East, of course. I agree with you. Like I said, our East is picked exactly the same. Georgia's head and shoulders above the rest. Then you have Florida at second, Kentucky at third, Mizzou at fourth, Carolina at fifth, Tennessee at sixth, Vandy at seventh. Of course, Georgia representing the East in the championship game. And then in the West, shocker, you have Alabama, Texas A&M at second, which I feel that's probably going to be a hell of a fight between those two for the West championship. LSU at third, Ole Miss at fourth, Arkansas at fifth, Auburn at sixth, and Mississippi State at seventh. Not to spoil it, I'm assuming you have the dogs, though, winning the SEC title, because you actually have them in your college football playoff. Talk about your East, West, and overall SEC champion. And Brent, I'll tell you this, believe it or not, I think it's Georgia's year too, man. I've got Georgia winning the SEC title. I've got them going undefeated. Carolina fans hate hearing me say that, and they say I'm crazy, and they say every year's Georgia's year. And I'm like, I know, I hate UGA, but man, if it's not their year this year with the quarterback they have and the talent they have, I don't know if they're ever going to have a year. Either way, though, Brett, break down your East, West, and championship picks for the SEC.
Yeah, you're right about with Georgia, how we hear it a lot, how, you know, they're the best talent on paper. They should be in the playoff every year. What's held them back has been their offense in big games. It's it used to be that traditional attack, and they couldn't outscore people. So here we are now, the second year of their new offense under Todd Monken. Vertical passing game. It's, you know, it's modern. It's whatever term you want to call it. And they have a five-star trigger man there with JT Daniels. And they struggled offensively the first half of the year. That was pre-Daniels. Once Daniels came into the lineup, they were incredible statistically. My game grader formula loved it. My offense and defense percentiles loved it. And just from watching them on tape, I mean, you see them taking a lot more vertical shots than they ever used to. And you know that they have the talent to do it. They have the firepower on the outsides. The offensive line's always there. So I see a complete team with Georgia. I do have them beating Alabama in Atlanta there for the conference title. With Alabama, obviously, you have one of the most talented rosters in the country every year. Some of the best player developers under Nick Saban. The difference, though, this year, they lose so much. They always lose a lot, but this year it's too much to handle. It's three Heisman candidates gone, two more All-American linemen gone, offensive coordinator gone, and then multiple first-round draft picks. I think six first-rounders overall gone. So, hey, I mean, you know, they're still the best team in the West on paper. I think it's a safe bet as a prognosticator to put them first. But I do like Georgia better coming into 2021. From there, it's a very crowded division in the West. A&M I have second, but number eight overall nationally. LSU third, but 11th nationally. And Ole Miss fourth and still in the top 20. So I have four teams there in the top 20 from the SEC West. A lot to like at each one of these. A&M, their defense is going to carry them this year. And it's really, if they hit a home run with that Haynes King, the new quarterback, replacing Kellen Mond, it's kind of an unknown right now. But, hey, if they hit a homer with him, they could win the West. LSU, I hope everyone got their jokes in on LSU last year when they were going through the all-time transition, because this team is just loaded with talent. They're a top-five recruiter in the five-year and three-year trend. I think it's like 20 starters back and just stockpiled at every position. It's, you know, breaking down each position group for them. They're loaded. They can make a run. I like their coordinator hires too. They kind of fix some issues there. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, really overnight, he installed an incredible offense. Matt Corral, the leading returning quarterback in quarterback rating in the nation. And, you know, a stable of receivers, a great running back duo there too, with Ely and Snoop Connor. So, like what they have, and really address some concerns on defense for me. It was a terrible defense last year, let's be honest. But they signed not only the number one, but the number one and number two overall JUCO defensive tackles. So they really fortified the center of that defense, that core of the defense, good enough for a top 20 ranking. And then from there, you have teams going through the second year bonus, as I call it, with Arkansas and Mississippi State. Of course, Arkansas hired Sam Pittman to fix that offensive line, to fix that defense. He hired two great coordinators himself with Kendall Briles and Barry Odom. And they're all going to benefit from a full offseason and 20 starters back. So I like them to make a move up the ranks here, up the SEC West ladder to fifth. Mississippi State was another one that's going through that second year bonus. I went back and researched, how important that second year is to Mike Leach and his systems at Texas Tech and then at Washington State. And on average, their second year, he adds 11 points per game and about 100 yards of passing per game. And it's not a surprise because he harps on this and his offense says, hey, it's just a sheer amount of reps. It's reps in practice. It's timing. It's just running these core of concepts a million times. So they didn't get that in 2020 with no preseason. So they get that this year. But, as life is in the SEC West, I think they're still in last place. They can make a great jump and still be last in this crowded division. Auburn, like I said, a coaching change team. I still have sixth, right above, a shade above Mississippi State. So very, very tough division this year. I think it's the best in all of college football this year. It's held that title for quite some time, but really this year it's flexing its muscles.
Now, Brett, I know we got to get you out of here, but really quick, your playoff picks, because I remember specifically a couple of weeks ago you had said, promoting the magazine, you've got a playoff pick that nobody else is going to have in their top four. We're thinking to ourselves, all right, yeah, cool, sure, whatever. All right, whatever. But you look at your playoff picks. I'm going to read these off. You have Oklahoma as the number one seed. Fine, no issues there. Georgia, number two. Cool. Ohio State, number three. You have the North Carolina Tar Heels in the four spot. I speak for all of Gamecock Nation. We say we would love nothing more than for you to be right, my friend. But break down your playoff picks. Who's your national champion? I'll tell you, Brett, I've got Georgia winning the whole thing. I don't know. There's something that tells me it's Georgia's year. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I got the Dogs taking home the trophy. But tell me about your playoff picks, and really, I want to hear about that North Carolina pick. I like Sam Howell, too. I like Mac Brown. I think most of us just assume, it'll be Clemson, Alabama. Clemson will be in the top four. But you have neither of them making it. I have UNC in the four spot. Just talk about that. Break down that for me just a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. That was definitely the headliner. It's getting a lot of attention. and it's not just me throwing stuff against the wall. In 2019, I was the only publication out there to call for Alabama to miss the playoff, and that came true. Last year, I was one of the few to call for Oklahoma to miss going through their transition, and that came true. So some hits here and there. But with this year, real quick at the top, with Georgia, we hit on. With Oklahoma, finally, they have a defense to pair with that elite offense, and it's the second year with Rattler, second year with that great offensive line. I think they run away with the Big 12. And then with Ohio State, one of those playoff dynasty programs that reloads every year. The difference being there's really no challenger this year in the Big Ten. So even if they trip up once as a young team early, they're still going to ride through with 12-1 and make the playoffs. So it comes down to this fourth spot. Many would just pencil Clemson right in. I think, in fact, every single magazine out there has Clemson in the playoff. What I see there is a couple of things. Well, first, the changing of the guard at quarterback, going from the first overall draft pick in the country, in the NFL, to a new guy who's only started two games. And yes, did DJ play well in those two games? He played fine, but there's no guarantee that this changing in the guard doesn't miss a step. There's also no depth behind him because a lot of those great backups transferred out. So not just that, but ETN is gone. The offensive line took a step back last year that was uncharacteristic of Clemson. And then their defense kind of got exposed big time by Ohio State, something we hadn't seen from them since 2013. But now specifically to UNC, what I really like is their offense. I spoke with their offensive coordinator, Phil Longo. He's an offensive genius, the way he's taken his scheme. Also similar to Lincoln Riley, which then I guess would be similar to Beamer if you want to, go transitive property. But it's air raid pass concepts on the outsides, downhill run game in the middle. He's got a Heisman candidate, Sam Howell. I'm sure everyone's heard of him by now, but making incredible jumps from first to second year. I look for another one here in his third year. It's an NFL caliber line up front. They average 325, 6'5". It's all very veteran. And then on defense, what's really stood out to me, that had held them back a little bit was the defense the last couple of years. But the way that Mac Brown has brought in these top 15 and top 10 recruiting classes, these five-star kids were starting to break into the lineup as true freshmen last year as the season was going on. Because remember, they didn't have a preseason or a summer. they were kind of like battling through the roster as the season was going on. They're all experienced now coming back in 2021. And I love what they have. And the last bit on them is their schedule. This really stood out to me. It's a very manageable schedule where their big non-conference game is Notre Dame, who I think is going to take a massive step back, losing four linemen to the pros, Ian Book gone, defensive coordinator gone. So I think they win that one. They miss Clemson in the regular season, and their big threat in the Coastal is Miami, who they beat 62-20 last year. So they're going to be favored in all 12 games, Vegas-wise, if you're into the betting angle of this. They're going to be favored in all 12. Now, can they avoid an upset? We'll see. I think they go 11-1 in the regular season and get to that play-in game, if you will, with Clemson, a win-and-in scenario, and they have the firepower to do it. So I'm taking UNC. It's way off the grid, but really not so much when you look at these win totals and look at these Vegas spreads game to game. They're going to be favored a lot this year.
Hey, Clemson not in the playoff. That's all you got to say to me, man. I love it. Brett Cianci, always a pleasure. Hey, last thing before I let you go, Brett, if South Carolina is going to go bowling this year in Shane Beamer's first season, in your opinion, what has to go right?
I think the receivers step up big time. I think that the receivers really take a step forward. Some young guys emerge, maybe Dakarian Joyner, some X-factor weapons come out of the woodwork because that'll really help, move guys out of the box, keep safeties honest on the outsides and let that run game flourish. Cause you got to have each piece of this puzzle on offense. And obviously the O-line and running backs are there. Doty's got raw potential, top 100 potential. We need the receiver group to step up.
For sure. He's Brett Cianci of Pick Six Previews. PickSixPreviews.com is where you can get the magazine, the most accurate and best magazine in the game. I'll say it. Brett, always a pleasure, man. Let's do it again soon. Appreciate you.
Oh, of course, Chris. And, I mutual respect. I mean, I appreciate what you built from the ground up there with the Spurs Up show and your brand and your company. Like me, you're a one-man machine, a one-man operation. So a ton of respect here from Pick Six Previews. And we'll talk soon, man.
For sure. Game, respect, game. He's Brett Cianci. I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in. And we'll catch you next time on the episode of the Spurs Up show.